League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast. We have finally, yes, entered the 2022 season. Round one is done and dusted. And it was a solid season opener, to say the least. And welcome, of course, to the WTF1 founder, Tom Bellingham. And hello. The WTF, wow, a little hello. God, you're feeling very chirpy considering 0 points. And Katie Fairman, the WTF1 author. I hope you've started writing your next WTF1 annual and done the first race already, covered in red. You're also wearing red. I appreciate the dedication to the Ferrari hype train. First of all, before we get into your thoughts, just want to say this podcast is sponsored by Elgato. Thank you to them for sponsoring this entire season-long podcast. We've got microphones, we've got arms. We've got arms, we've got microphone arms, we've got webcams, we've got the lot from them, and they're making us feel very professional. So thank you, Elgato, for the sponsorship. And yes, shall we let's get your first thoughts, guys. How are we feeling? Good?
Very good, actually. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, very excited.
Don't come into this podcast. It's not, so yeah, you feel good.
I know. I'm going to disappoint you, I'm afraid.
Oh, for God's sake.
I'm expecting a big
And you're fine, Katie,
match.
It's a neutral, even though you're wearing the red.
Yeah, I thought I'd bring a bit of colour to the podcast. And this jumper is really, if you're watching on YouTube, it's really looking very vibrant. But
very vibrant, in fact. Welcome to our Team WTF1 members who are watching this live. If you want to join Team WTF1, there's a link in the description. And you can, just for £2 a month, you can get loads of exclusive content. So lovely stuff. Let's get into some three-word race reviews, shall we? And you actually are right about bringing colour to the podcast, Katie, because me and Tommy really aren't bringing anything. Apart from Tommy's cape in the background, which I'm surprised is still hanging. three-word race reviews from some fans. John Black's photos. Thank you, regulations. Becky _takes_photos. McLaren is woken. And Yash 543, Ferrari master Blan, whatever you want to call it. It's the meme. Thank you, regulations. Okay, interesting. I think that's a topic of conversation. McLaren is definitely broken, and Ferrari dream. Let's dive into my three-word race review, shall we, straight away. Here we go. So I've gone with Leclerc era arrives. Welcome everybody. Come in, there's room for everybody apart from Tommy to come into the Ferrari inn. And yes, I think that the race itself, from a Charles Leclerc perspective, he showed that he hasn't lost it. There was a lot of doubt around his performances last year. Carlos Sainz, is he better than Charles Leclerc? You know, we kind of analysed it at the end of the season and thought, you know what, Charles Leclerc had some pretty bad luck. He also made some mistakes and whatnot, but he had the upper hand over Carlos Sainz the entirety of the weekend. Carlos not too happy about that. You could tell in his post-race interviews. But yeah, I think that, you know, it's a Charles Leclerc era. We may well see 23 race wins on the trot this year. But overall, if we're looking at Ferrari, not only did they have the qualifying pace, but they had the race pace too to hold off Max Verstappen, which is not something I don't think anyone really expected going into race day.
I'll be honest, like, obviously there was a lot of hype going into the season. And yes, we're only one race into it, but I've just got used to not being allowed to have nice things. So I wasn't expecting Ferrari to be as dominant as they were. Obviously, qualifying pace looked great. Sainz, you know, he put in a good performance, and we will talk about Leclerc, but I'll talk about Sainz first. Sainz put in some good performances, but you can see from his body language and what he was saying, he's still not happy with, you know, a P2 finish or P3 in quali. So yeah, it seems like there's a lot in that Ferrari that is still yet to be shown. But yeah, fantastic job from Charles Leclerc. And I'm very happy to see a Ferrari on that top step again, because although it was only 2019 since we've last had a Ferrari win, it genuinely feels like a lifetime ago, like a whole generation ago. Maybe I'm just being dramatic, but it's been a long time coming, hence the red jumper.
It was 910 days, which is pretty mad. I think
had a pandemic since the last Ferrari win.
Yeah, and I read that it was the second longest winless streak Ferrari have ever had. And boy, did they come back in a very, very strong way. It was a Leclerc masterclass, really. He was just drove the perfect weekend, really, didn't he?
Keep going.
I knew you were going to say that. What impressed me most, actually, was, his quali was great, but in the race, he did just look extremely composed. And to kind of go what you said at the start, I actually felt like I had to be the Leclerc fanboy trying to sort of like calm everyone down of this whole like Charles Leclerc is so overrated and all this kind of stuff after last year. He just proved that, you know, give him a decent car and actually he is the real deal. We'll go into his wheel-to-wheel battle with Max Verstappen, but even that, you know, he was calm and composed and played it perfectly. And yeah, I wouldn't say trounced Sainz, but Sainz didn't look like being anywhere near him for the whole race. It never looked like Sainz was a threat. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that dynamic continues, because when the car is good, I feel like Leclerc would be the stronger driver. And then Sainz is that more Science is like Mr. Consistency almost, which I know was Ocon's nickname a while back, but he is that more consistent driver. So let's see when we get to maybe some more crazy races. I mean, we've got Saudi next, so that's going to be an interesting one. But yeah, Leclerc was just brilliant.
He was. Keep it up, Tully. let's talk about the Verstappen.
That'll be the last time I'll be saying it.
Let's talk about the Max Schaar battle, because that was it kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. You know, I felt like the commentary was a little bit relaxed for a round one season opener. It felt very much like it was a free practice session. And of course, Verstappen went for the undercut, and all of a sudden he was on the back of Charles Leclerc with that one lap where he was able to attack. And, you know, we'll get onto the tyres as well, because that was something that not a lot of us thought was going to be, you know, a problem, is this degradation that we saw in the first round of the season. But the actual fight itself, you know, I think Max almost caught Charles a little bit off guard down towards turn one the first time, because Charles did defend to a certain degree. That's why we saw such epic sparks off the back of the Red Bull, because of how far he went offline and was almost in the pit exit. But, you know, after that, he then learned, did Charles, that, okay, Max got the position into turn one, goes a little bit deep. He can then just optimize his racing line through the next couple of corners, get a good run down towards turn four. Of course, you then get DRS as well. So when he managed to get past there, and I'm not going to lie, I winced a little bit when Charles just moved over a little bit in the braking zone. And I was like, oh God, this could go very badly. Because
remember who you're doing this to.
Exactly. Yeah. And that did make me a little bit concerned. But thankfully, braked late enough and there was no problem. Those next two times, you know, Leclerc even said after the race that he braked early to allow Max to take the bait, if anything, down the inside. And it reminded me a lot of Hamilton-Rosberg battle from a few years ago, 2016, I want to say, maybe, or something around then, where Rosberg was on fresher tyres, Hamilton wasn't. It was on pretty old tyres, and it was just after a safety car restart, and Rosberg kept taking the bait of going up the inside at turn one. Then Hamilton managed to always get him back. It reminded me a lot of that. I think, you know, from what you said, Tommy, and echoing that, he was very relaxed, calm and composed in that battle. And it was almost like he was playing the F1 game. That's what people do in the F1 game, is bait the other one to get DRS. That's what he did.
I'm surprised, actually, that Max didn't maybe have one go where he didn't try the lunge into turn one and then tried to get him. Because especially after the first two times. But I mean, that battle, and this is why, sorry to disappoint everyone that probably was expecting me to be glum. And obviously I am very disappointed that, Red Bull ended up with 0 points and Max was out of the race. But that battle was so good And I was quite pessimistic about this new era, and that just delivered. I mean, you mentioned about the commentary. I actually just watched the Channel 4 highlights, and Alex's commentary is just goosebumps. Like, he's like shouting at hell that, you know, we wanted these new regulations and this is what it's doing. They're like swapping positions and stuff. It was absolutely awesome. So that battle was so good. Leclerc really did play it well. I guess the one thing I am disappointed at, not just the fact that Max retired, but is obviously the fact that if he hadn't retired, we might have seen that battle again in the final laps, especially when Max pitted. We could have got a battle where Max was coming through the field on better tyres, and would Leclerc pit, would he not? Or even after the safety car, if Max's car hadn't just crapped itself in every way. We might have got that battle again. And I mean, yes, we would. I think that would have been insane if we'd had that battle again. Imagine that battle again, but it was like the last five laps of the race. It would be unbelievable. But yeah, it was awesome.
It was. Bahrain is, I feel like, quite an underrated track in terms of the amount of overtaking that you can do there. But yeah, that was such a brilliant battle for the lead that I worry that us F1 fans, we're going to have such big expectations now going into the rest of the season. Like, I want that every single race. But it was certainly a good advertisement for the new rules and regulations, because like you, Tommy, I was slightly cautious of all of these big promises F1 were making and whether we'd actually see it, especially straight away. So it was pleasing to see such a wicked battle really early on in the season.
It was indeed. Next question, and probably the most important one of the lot. Team WTF1 member Lev's F1. How long until Tommy and Matt's relationship breaks down? It's already gone, Lev's. It's already gone. It's finished. No, it's not. He's already trying to apply to become part of the Tifosi, and I've had to reject his application immediately.
I don't really.
Afraid, okay, we'll see. Yeah, okay. All right, we'll see how long that cape stays on the wall for.
It's slowly become a Ferrari flag.
But no, this podcast will be full of banter, of course. You know, it'll be back and forth. I'm sure there'll be a lot of times where Max and Red Bull do better than Charles Leclerc, and I will take it terribly. But you know, just remember, everybody, especially Max fans out there that might be getting triggered by me gloating, but this is part of it. You know, we're fans and we're having fun, and it's just little pokes. It's nothing too out of the... out of the extraordinary.
That's exactly. We've got a street circuit to come. So remember, Charles will be in the wall and that, so it's fine.
Oh, wow. Okay. So to answer your question, F1, it has actually broken down now after that comment.
I love it.
Wow. Any thoughts on that, Katie, as well? As an outside, you're kind of like a referee, really, here. You're in the middle of us, literally, in this Team WTF1 live podcast. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm stocking up on the popcorn, and I think I'm going to feel quite a bit like a marriage counsellor at certain points throughout the season, so that could be interesting. But yeah, I'm just happy to take a backseat and listen to you guys bicker on that. I think everybody else that watches a podcast or listens to it.
You might throw in a little Nico Rosberg did this at some point from your fandom of Nico, but that's about it really, isn't it? Next question, Maximus Deckard. Ferrari has now the best car and great drivers, but are they truly ready for the 23 race long title battle?
Choo choo.
I'm trying to remain objective here. I think that, you know, I still fear what Mercedes will be able to do once they figure out how not to be on a bouncy castle for the entirety of a 60 odd lap race. I think that it'd be stupid to write Mercedes off, even if we're a third of the season through and they've just been picking up fourth, fifths, whatever. I still think that Mercedes could easily come back and win the title. You know, this season, as I've said in many videos over the last few weeks, is a race to develop your car. Just because Ferrari are the quickest coming out of the blocks in round one does not necessarily mean they are going to be the fastest halfway through the season or even be leading the championship at the halfway point. You know, Mattia Binotto said in an interview, I think it was for F1 Live, and he said that, he was kind of almost saying that they're still the underdogs. They're still the ones that they're not the favourites. And I truly believe that. You know, I'm very much basking in the glory of Ferrari being at the front right now, because I know it's probably not going to last. But it's going to to and fro. That's what I believe in this season. I think that, you know, Mercedes will even get a grip of it in maybe in a few races time where you go, oh, wow, okay, they're actually quite quick. And, you know, we might see some midfield teams, Haas even getting in the mix. We don't know. And I think that's the beauty of it, that just because they've had this race in Bahrain, considering they've also had 24 hours of testing, they've had a lot more time to dial in the car than what we'll then have going to Saudi Arabia this week, that I think it will change a lot. And that's what I want to see. You know, I want to see seven winners in seven races like we saw in 2012, was it? I think it was. Was it 2012?
2012, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I don't. I want to see Charles Leclerc win every seven.
Yeah, but I was going to say, you're right. Seven,
but yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating.
It will be. And I think, yeah, as much as it's really easy to jump aboard the hype train and all this kind of stuff, we have got to remember this is a 23 race calendar and that it's not one in the after the first race. I think Binotto said yesterday that he's going to, you need to give it sort of four or five races. So maybe around Spain or Miami, to see if Ferrari really can challenge for the Constructors' Championship this year and obviously help their drivers with the Drivers' Championship. But yes, they're certainly looking like a very strong team. The package that they've got there, the PU in the back, the drivers themselves, you know, we ranked, and I think F1 fans also ranked Charles and Carlos as like the strongest teammate pairing that's on the grid. So that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch unfold now that we know that they do have competitive machinery underneath them. That's going to be very interesting because you can already tell from Carlos's body language this weekend that he was not a happy bunny. So that's going to be extremely exciting to watch unfold. But yes, they do look from the first race like they have a good package going forward.
Not just the car as well, they were just impressive on all accounts, really. I mean, I think the big worry probably for a lot of people is that even if Ferrari built this mega car, that we might see some of the old Ferrari creeping through and it'll be interesting to see how that goes this year. But on evidence of the first race, you know, strategy was decent. Like, it's hard to know, say it was good, because I mean they just covered Red Bull essentially, and it was very close at times, but you know, there was no major strategy mess ups or anything. And you know, even things like the pit stops, like I think Red Bull did a 2.9 second stop and they were like, oh, pit stops are still pretty quick this year, and then Ferrari banged in a 2.3 second stop and it's like, oh, okay, Ferrari like mean business this year on every level. But and it couldn't have gone any better for them in the fact that Mercedes will undoubtedly catch up. I'd be very surprised if they don't, and they will find something and be on the pace, but they are not on the pace at the moment. And it's clear that in terms of fighting for the wins in this early stage of the season, it is Ferrari versus Red Bull, and Ferrari got maximum points and Red Bull got nothing. Pain. But, but yeah, it is like, it really couldn't have gone any better, you know, for them, because Red Bull are the ones that were keeping them honest and looked like it is a very close fight between those two. And then Merck weren't really anywhere. And yes, Merck did get very fortunate and did damage limitation and got 3 and 4. But Ferrari, with that massive early lead in the constructors, even in a 23 race season, 44 points. Gap is massive. So
yeah,
what a start.
That is hashtag blessed if I've ever seen it, to be honest with you. You know, that's it's a big swing. You know, as much as we talk about the first race, yeah, whatever, we still got 22 to go. Being 44 points ahead of Red Bull in the constructors is huge. And of course, Max not scoring any points either after, you know, having all these issues, having steering issues before his car obviously broke down. You know, finishing second, all things considered, would have been a great result for him. But unfortunately, it all went wrong in the last few laps. Katie, your three-word race review, please.
Mine is favourites fall short, and that is in reference to the unusual and uncharacteristic struggles we saw from certain teams on the grid, especially those that had a Mercedes power unit in the back. Take from that what you will. But yeah, McLaren had an absolute shocker. Aston Martin were pretty poor. Williams, who I think we all hoped would take a bit of a step forward, there was some promise there. I mean, they were ahead of the McLarens, which is just like a sentence that just blows my mind saying that now. But yeah, it was a difficult weekend for some of them. And maybe slightly surprising. I know that we made all these predictions coming into the season. I know my predictions have aged like milk. They have been so bad, but I'm happy that they have
not
been
Pepsi
bad
and milk though.
No, Tommy, we're looking at you. But I am more than happy to look like an idiot with my predictions going wrong, because it means I went for very pessimistic predictions, which is like Mercedes dominance, Hasselby at the back, all this kind of stuff. But where it's been jumbled up, it's actually meant for much more of an entertaining season, unless you are a McLaren fan. Mm. Thoughts and prayers, etc. But yeah, that's my three-word race review.
Lovely stuff. I think this is probably a good time to one, bring into context what I meant by Pepsi and milk, is that Tommy had promised our Team WTF1 members that we had a Discord call with that he was going to drink a Pepsi and milk combination if Mercedes didn't get a podium. I mean, the man is the luckiest person. I say lucky. His favourite driver scored 0 points, but you know, the fact that on the last lap of the race,
it's never in doubt. It was so unbelievable.
What, also, I want to, you know, at this stage, because, you know, I have to take these victories when I can. Pretty sure I put Mercedes P3, and you guys laughed at me, and you were convinced.
Who's laughing now?
Yeah, who's laughing now? But
I was at the end of the year when they.
Yeah, that's why I said I'm cashing in now. not at the end of the 23 race season.
Just not going to be on any right more now. Podcasts now. It's like, Ferrari won the title. Goodbye.
Exactly. That is what I will do. I'll come back to this first race of the season and go, wasn't I really happy back then when Ferrari were winning? Good stuff. Next question. Team WTF1 member Ham Gammon says, do we think Mercedes will find pace and we get a three-way fight to the end? How I see it, Ham Gammon, is Ferrari and Red Bull will be the fastest for 4 to 5 races. Mercedes will then get in the hunt. I think Ferrari may fall away a little bit, and then it'll be a Red Bull versus Mercedes fight for the rest of the season. That's unfortunately what I think. I don't think Ferrari will fall away to the extent of where they won't be anywhere near the front, but I don't know. It's just my gut feeling is that, probably because of the scarring of the last 8 years of Mercedes winning everything. But
your emotions have just done an absolute U-turn.
I've
of like,
just had a flashback.
Nah, Ferrari had time and then went, oh, wait, it's Ferrari. We shouldn't get too excited.
But I think that's probably a realistic expectation.
Lots of people seem to talk about Mercedes and Australia, which I think is after. We've got Saudi next, and then it's, I can do this, Imola, and then it's Australia, because the calendar is just, you know, it makes so much sense. So yeah, lots of people mentioning Australia and Mercedes. Maybe, I'm not sure if they're bringing upgrades there, or maybe Toto or somebody has mentioned something as to they think that Australia is going to be a good reference point. But yeah, I would like to think that Mercedes will have the resources and the people within the team to fix this issue that seems to be really holding them back, whether that's the porpoising or maybe there is something with the power unit that's not reacting to the new fuel particularly well. But like we say, it's Mercedes, and it's like the Thanos meme of I am inevitable. I feel like that's just Mercedes. They will just pull something out the bag and they'll be winning races again in no time. So yeah, maybe it's best to savor this while we can.
That's what you said, Matt. I think you said Hamilton is inevitable when we had our Pepsi and milk chat, because I mean, yeah, it was as soon as Hamilton was on the back of Perez, I was like, here we go. This is why I made that prediction, because he is inevitable. And that is Mercedes' big strength, that call it experience, call it, you know, damage limitation, call it being incredibly lucky, whatever side of the fence you're on, Mercedes bagged the most more points than they could ever dreamed of from that race. And especially, you know, on top of Red Bull and their failings, Mercedes, it is like, they're that team, especially Lewis Hamilton. And we even saw it last year to a point. It wasn't as extreme where they were bad, but it certainly looked like Red Bull might be a bit quicker. And then at the start of the season, and Hamilton just had that consistency throughout the year to keep in that fight, even though Max was just kind of finishing first and second in every race. So that you can never count particularly Hamilton out. And yeah, they just did everything they could, and it was perfect damage limitation for them, which is probably a big concern, particularly for Red Bull, to think like, you know, we've gone into that first race, finally we've got a car that's so much quicker than Mercedes. I mean, Mercedes were, was it 15, 30 seconds off base? I know they were kind of, there's even a quote that they said they were treating it as a test session because they knew they were so far off the pace of Red Bull and Ferrari, but would probably still finish fifth and sixth, so they could just do whatever they want because they went for the hard tyres, didn't they? And did something completely different. Even after all that, Mercedes have come out and bagged how many points? 27.
Seven?
I mean, yeah, that is just peak Mercedes, isn't it? We've got a terrible car. It's worse than Alfa Romeo, second in the World Championship, 27 points, 27 clear of Red Bull. They are actually inevitable, aren't they? So it's going to be an interesting fight. And I wouldn't, you know, it would be cool. I mean, a three-way fight for the title would be absolutely insane.
It would. You know, it's all well and good having a fast car, but you've got to get to the end. And, you know, clearly something went wrong in both of those Red Bull cars, not just one, that, you know, it was right at the end, but still, you know, there is a fine balancing act between reliability and pace. Okay, so we all know how ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, right? But here's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. With so many great shows on Netflix, it's only a matter of time until you run out of stuff to watch. So this whole week, I've been using ExpressVPN to binge other series that aren't available in my country. It's so simple to do. I just fire up the ExpressVPN app, change my location to wherever I need to go, refresh Netflix, and that's it. See, ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries, so just think about all the Netflix libraries you can go through. If you love anime, you can use ExpressVPN to access Japanese Netflix and be spirited away. But it's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service. Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there, but the reason I use ExpressVPN to watch shows is because it's ridiculously fast. There's never any buffering or lag, and you can stream in HD, no problem. If you visit our special link right now at expressvpn.com/WTF1, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the podcast, watch what you want, and protect yourself with ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/WTF1. Next question, Reshik_. Red Bull alongside Ferrari looked very reliable in pre-season. First race of the season and three out of the four Honda-powered cars Red Bull powertrain
Honda powered,
cars,
yeah.
didn't finish. Could that be a problem that defines the championship? Okay. I love some of these questions. It's like, right, let me just roll the dice. Christian Horner was interviewed afterwards and he wasn't sure until they have to, you know, properly diagnose the problems. But obviously, if Red Bull have a lot of these problems they didn't have last year, and that's what you need is bulletproof reliability in order to challenge for the championship. If they have more problems like this, where there's a 44-point swing between them and whatever team they're trying to beat, then yeah, absolutely. Even a couple, two or three sort of reliability issues across the season, if there's another team that's got, you know, decent reliability and isn't having these problems, that can be the difference between winning and losing. So, you know, to have such a devastating loss to what they could have scored for this first round is, you know, it's going to be something that they have to recover over these next few races. But if they have a few more, then all of a sudden they're looking at the top of the standings and thinking we can't even catch that. So yeah, reliability is obviously the most important thing in a championship challenge.
Yeah, and I can't believe that all the porpoising issues. And it was, yeah, the Red Bulls that had the failure, and it was nothing to do with that. I know the question is about Honda Power or RBPT. RBPT. But from what my understanding is that Gasly's was obviously an engine electrical fire or something.
MGUK
issue. And the Red Bulls was a fuel pump. It's unsure yet. We'll have to wait until we get a proper diagnosis, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens there and when they discover the issue, because they cannot afford for that to happen again. It's this, you know, that we're racing again on Sunday, and if that happens again and Ferrari are 80 points clear,
hello,
then
yeah, you know, Matt's
the hope train is on the horizon and about to disappear out of shot. So we'll find out what it is. I know a lot of people on Twitter are jumping on that it might be this fuel pump thing, and there is quite an amusing thing that the fuel pump issue is a standardized piece, so it's not actually something Red Bull make, and it's made by an Italian company, which is very amusing.
Oh my dear.
and obviously, yeah, exactly, yeah. Sabotage. And I don't believe that for one second, and you shouldn't either, but it is still amusing. So
amusing, also.
Yeah, I was
also,
like,
also it's pain inside,
savage. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's going to be a one to keep an eye out on, because yeah, I think it's, we can speculate, but when we get an official diagnosis from Red Bull, that will be the important thing here. But I was listening to the race podcast, I think it was on this morning, and obviously they were at testing, actually on the ground and covering it, on the ground, my favorite phrase, but they were suggesting, not fact, just suggesting, that Red Bull didn't seem to do any or many of race simulations in testing, and also didn't do any low fuel runs. So it could be related to that, because obviously at the end of the race, when it happened, cars are pretty much, the tank is empty. So whether it was something relating to that and they've kind of shot themselves in the foot, I don't know. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the official diagnosis is. But yeah, crikey, we can't be having that again. I mean, even in terms of the championship, I know there are a lot of Mercedes fans that were like, ha, karma. I think karma was trending on Twitter yesterday, which is interesting. But
savage, isn't it?
It is. But like for the championship as well, like as a neutral, I want to be seeing Verstappen and Leclerc in this championship battle bubbling through. I don't want a double DNF Red Bull. And as a Sergio Perez fan, I mean, crikey, that last lap was heartbreaking. I was proper yelling at the TV with that.
At least we got to see, hit him at one point. Yeah. I was like, oh, has he spun him round? Nope. Failure.
We got to see the sassy Checo pose that he always pulls. As soon as he has something wrong with his car, it's hands on the hips, slightly bent back. One of
slightly
those kind of
bent
poses.
Back.
Yeah. He goes for like a proper, like sassy little pose.
Throws the hip out. Yeah.
He does. So, you know, there's some funny thing out of a miserable DNF, but yeah, I'm sure he'd rather points than just like become a meme on Twitter.
Yeah, I think so too. At John_Rolfs, speaking of bad performances, how concerned should we be with McLaren this year? Horrendously concerned, John. I'm not going to beat around the bush. They were dreadful this weekend in Bahrain. You know, and I don't think that's an unfair statement. Not only, they were just poor in every part of their performance. You know, Lando managed to get out of Q1, which we thought, oh, wow, you know. But the fact that Danny Ric got knocked out in Q1, we were all very surprised about. Oh, wow, you know, is it Danny Ric? Whatever. But they were nowhere. You know, I even thought that maybe they had a chance of being lapped twice if we didn't have the safety cars and stuff, which, you know, that's Haas levels. Like, clearly they've got some fundamental problems. They had problems in testing with their brakes and their overheating and, you know, being concerned about even finishing a race distance. But, you know, I saw their interviews afterwards. They looked a bit mystified. You know, Lando was like, yeah, we've got a lot of work to do, but didn't really seem to have any sort of answers or insight as to why they are so far off the pace. So it's a bad time right now if you're a McLaren fan. I don't think this is going to be a very quick fix. You know, they've had all this time to develop the car over the winter. But, you know, they've clearly got the philosophy wrong. They've got something wrong with that car, which is not going to be just whacking on a new side pod and everything's fixed. So I think it's going to be pain for McLaren, potentially for a lot of this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, yesterday, with everything going on with the Grand Prix, I feel like McLaren's performance, unless you were a McLaren fan, like just watching the names like in 17th or 18th or last or wherever. It's kind of one of those stories that's not being picked up too much because there's just been so much else going on. But yeah, really a huge step back for McLaren, considering how well, you know, Lando did at the start of the 2021 season. It's sort of just been completely flipped on its head, and it's reminiscent of the McLaren Honda days, which if you are a new Drive to Survive fan, perhaps, and you weren't around for the McLaren Honda days, I'm thinking of you because you're going to be in for quite the ride this year, if it remains that these issues don't get solved. Yeah, a big shock, especially for the celebrities that Martin Brundle interviewed on the grid that said that they thought McLaren were going to win the race. So,
they had no idea where they were. I'm surprised they didn't say that Valentino Rossi was going to win the race or something.
Yeah, they didn't have a clue.
I think the Guy Ritchie was like, asked, "Oh, who, you know, who's your money on?" And he was like, my money's on him.
Look around,
McLaren, the only team I've heard of. Whatever,
but he's been to so many Grand Prix before. He's like at a Grand Prix every year, so I don't get what.
He said his money was on the guy that was with him. That was very the weirdest thing. That's because that's quite clear that he had no idea who to say.
They're probably just getting trolleyed on champagne and stuff, and don't even
fair.
Watch.
I mean, it's a good life, isn't it? It's a good life.
Must be nice.
Yeah, with McLaren, I mean, going back to the. Red Bull very quickly, like at least their positive is they're very quick, and yes, they had an absolute shocking race, but you'd take being at least quick. But McLaren, you know, it doesn't matter that they both finished, because they finished 14th and 15th, and that's with three DNFs. Yikes. I don't think I've ever witnessed a nosedive from pre-season testing quite like McLaren. From they could actually be in the mix in the top four to they're genuinely like Haas.
Yeah, what was it last year? What was so it bizarre. I feel like you said a bold statement about.
I did. I'm looking forward to buying a bunch of Kevin Magnussen Haas merchandise and wearing it on the podcast.
That was the prediction. You said you'd buy merch for whoever finishes fourth.
I said it would be Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, and Red Bull, the top four in the constructors' title. And if that is not the case, whoever is in that, I'll be buying some merchandise and I'll wear it on the podcast and apologize to them.
Because obviously Haas are third in the constructors right now. Fair enough, they're on 10 points.
Will they
points,
be able to develop, or is it just early? Yeah, like, early pace.
I wonder.
Because they've had more wind tunnel time and develop. Same with Alfa Romeo. So it'd be interesting. Yeah, will it be Alpine or someone like trying to catch up? We shall see.
Very fun, Tommy. What's your three-word race review?
My three-word race review is so many positives. And it's mainly just I'm kidding myself. But no, despite my own bias, I am at the end of the day a Formula One fan first, and I think we all are. And that's way to start that season, when I was very pessimistic about the new cars, the new era. You know, back to that point of me mentioning the merchandise, I pretty much predicted identical order to last season. And on the first lap, we had a Haas and Mercedes side by side into turn four. And if that isn't the best way to start a new era, I don't know what is. It feels, you know, the Leclerc-Verstappen battle we said was absolutely epic. It feels like a new era because you've got different people at the front. There's different teams at the top of the midfield. There's quite a lot of battling. I reserve judgment of being too hyped of the new regs until we see on a track, because I think Katie hit the nail on the head that Bahrain is actually a very underrated track, and we've seen good racing there before anyway, so let's see how these new cars work at an Imola or maybe a track that doesn't particularly get great racing. But it was awesome, and the race was so good. It was just a thriller from start to finish, really. And particularly Haas and Kevin Magnussen, I was just absolutely buzzing for, because he just drove such a good race. And yeah, just unbelievable drive from him. And it's just so many nice stories from the first race.
Thriller. Interesting. That's very headline-y from you there, Tommy. I wouldn't argue. I think there's a lot of season open hype here. I would not call the race a classic by any stretch. I think obviously it was great to have the fight for the lead and whatnot. But the thing that concerned me, and maybe around the regulations, was the field spread that we saw throughout all the cars. You know, there was these big highlight moments. As I say, the first few laps were great. We saw like the back sort of maybe 8 or 9 cars looked like they were all side by side in the first couple of laps, which was ridiculous. But the actual field spread we then saw was a bit concerning, in my opinion. And whether that is because of the actual philosophy of the car. What are you laughing at, Katie?
I'm just laughing at Tommy coming in with so many positives and you're like, no, there was this.
I just don't want to get too carried away because I was concerned about the field spread, because a lot, you know, it wasn't like they were following within a second a lot of the time and it was fine.
I think McLaren were lapped on in 30 laps, weren't they?
Yeah.
But McLaren, so...
but generally it did seem like it was like 2x2 with a lot of teams and whatnot. But yeah, for me, it was still a great race. Of course, I am a little bit hesitant by the fact it is obviously the season opener and there's a lot of excitement for the new stories, as you say, Tommy. I think for the actual racing, I'm a little bit concerned as to whether or not whether there are other issues at play here, which mean the cars can't follow as closely, one being overheating. And, you know, because we've seen the loads of different cooling innovations on all the different cars, you know, the Mercedes in particular, you know, can that car follow when it's got such thin side pods and not a lot of cooling going on? You know, also as well, the fragility of the tyres, you know, seeing a 3-stop race, you know, clearly a lot of the teams not wanting to push those tyres as hard as maybe we've seen in previous years, which is not what we expected. So... I'm a little bit hesitant in terms of the actual racing moving forward. We'll see. You know, Saudi will give us a good idea as to whether or not we'll see good racing around there. But yeah, I wouldn't have called Bahrain a thriller, but it was decent. But it wasn't a thriller.
Interesting.
I think there was
Charles Leclerc.
Yeah, that's true.
I know.
It's because he dominated and it's just boring. Just Leclerc is so boring. So dominant.
Yeah, it's just honestly.
Oh no. Don't start with that, please. But I do agree that there were moments, especially in the middle of the Grand Prix, where things got a little bit not boring. What's the word I'm looking for? Like it wasn't crazy, you know, 24/7 throughout the whole thing. But yeah, I thought it was a, you know, decent first race. And as Tommy said, there are lots of good little stories here and there. Special big shout out goes to Guan Yu Zhou, because Zhou Guan Yu. Guan Yu Zhou.
Literally. I felt like Crofty said both.
Every single time he made different. Such a thing of it, didn't he? It's like,
yeah.
Guan Yu Zhou, whichever you prefer.
I felt like he said
he's already missed
each one about 15 times. And then was like, well, one of them's going to be right, so it's fine. Very odd.
I think he said that he would rather be Zhou Guan Yu, so maybe that's something we can adopt on here, but it's remembering it is the thing. But yeah, he had, are we going to talk about him? Maybe not. But he had such a brilliant first race weekend, and I'm really proud of him, because there were a lot of people who were ready to slate him, say he didn't deserve a seat. Yes, there are people who have graduated from F2 that perhaps maybe from their results deserve an F1 seat and haven't got one at the moment. Oscar Piastri being a prime example. Yeah, exactly. But he's really done a brilliant job. So virtual pat on the back for Zhou Guan Yu. There you go.
Lovely, lovely. Before people were commenting as well about my comments of the race, I did say it was decent. Okay.
Oh yeah, no,
not for you. I was just in my head like, oh no, people are going to think I hate it. I think the 2021 season as well has created a warped sense of what Formula One should be. But hey, new regulations. They promised us all this. So I'm hoping. It's interesting as well that I think it was K-Mag said after the race that the cars themselves have less slipstream. So actually following behind the car, there's less slipstream, but then the DRS is slightly more powerful. So he said overall it's better for racing, but it is actually still as difficult to overtake, which is Interesting. Whether that's going to be a good or bad thing, who knows?
I mean, we've not really got into this because we kind of glossed it over. But I think part of this as well was that the wing Verstappen was running. But oh my days, his DRS, it was like levels of being like a second behind.
So I jumped the gun on that one, and I was like, bin DRS, it's over, whatever. I hate it. But the thing is, actually looking into that a bit more, it was clear that Leclerc was using battery in a different part of the track. He was trying to break that second, gap that he needed to basically disable DRS on Verstappen's part, but didn't manage it. It was 9/10 and Verstappen's going up the inside into turn one. And when you looked at it at face value, and I will hold my hands up, I was one of those people. And I was like, God, how good is DRS? It's too good. Get rid of it. Hate it. Unless it's not Leclerc being passed. No, but when we actually looked at other drivers fighting with DRS, it seemed like they were struggling. So clearly there was differences in energy deployment. And then, of course, we've spoken about, Leclerc braking early as well, which maybe made it look even more powerful than it was. It was a titanic battle, and I can appreciate it now that I was too quick to judge DRS. And I'm sorry, DRS. I hope I haven't hurt your feelings. Okay, next question. Gandalf 6700 asks, do you think K-Mag or Haas would be able to get a podium with the pace they have now? And also, yes, Zhou Guan Yu, well done. I forgot to also say that from Katie's point. Why not? I think that, if we have a crazy race, a couple more DNFs, K-Mag's on the podium. Gunther Steiner even joked that if K-Mag hadn't been out of the car for 40 months, he would have got a podium in that Haas. So, yeah.
Ironic, because he's the one that got him out of the seat. But yeah, off.
Yeah, and money talks, I think, is probably the right phrase for that. But we might see some crazy races. And Haas seem to be the ones that may well be able to get involved as the fourth fastest team right now. So sign me up.
Yeah, we need... Yeah, I think it will involve, like you say, a crazy race and the top three teams having an issue that allows K-Mag. But I think I wouldn't be shocked if K-Mag was seventh again, like next week, best
Nico Hülkenberg
of the rest.
Vibes.
Nico Hülkenberg vibes. He just needs that moment where it's not just both Red Bulls, it's both Ferraris and both Mercs, and then he can win a race. And that's what I want to see. That would be incredible.
But
he was epic, wasn't he? To come back in when you've had, Haas did a hilarious tweet about it, come back, P1 in testing, bangs it in P7 in quali, which everyone, myself included, thought, that's incredible, but I almost don't want to get too hyped. Like, I feel like he was going to drop back.
Mm. Especially when he kept locking up into turn one, didn't he? Yeah. It was like, oh no.
And I was like, oh, he's going to drop back, or especially because he had a mechanical problem in qualifying. I was like, are they even going to finish? And it's going to be heartbreaking because he's probably going to be in seventh or something and retire. But fifth is just insane. And imagine after that first run of testing, when we all put Haas at the bottom and thought they were still the worst team, that Haas would be fifth and third in the constructors' title. Madness.
Imagine clipping this to us in last year and being after Bahrain.
Wrote them off, didn't we?
Yeah, and I know people have been commenting it on when you're asking for questions for the podcast. I've said some pretty mean things about Gene Haas and Gunther Steiner recently because last year their performance was shocking. That's no secret. But I take my hat off to Gunther Steiner, especially for all the heat that he's had to go through the last few months, because they have done well. They've delivered. And I am so surprised by it. I really am. I know Kevin Magnussen said he was speechless after the results yesterday. I feel like most fans are just pretty speechless, to be honest with you, because we've got so used to seeing Haas down at the back of the pack. And they're, we've watched their gradual decline, and now it seems as if they've just got some fresh blood in the team with Magnussen. He's come back with a great energy. Schumacher, he's just great in his own ways, and now he's actually got a mentor there that he can look up to and a teammate that he respects. as well as a teammate with experience. The only way is up for Haas, I feel. And now I've just given them the jinx of the season.
I was going to say, there's not much higher they can go, Katie. God,
a podium. Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
I'd love to see them get a podium. I really would.
Maybe.
I think I would cry if they got a podium.
You'd cry?
But I cry at everything. Though, okay. So that's not really too crazy.
Fair. I just love the fact that Haas have produced one of the greatest daylight robberies in the history of Formula One. You know, they've taken Mazepin's money, they've built a better car, they've binned him off and then got K-Mag in the car.
The fact that they replaced him with the driver, developed the car with his money, then bought the old driver back is Haas master plan.
Oh, it is. Honestly, Gunther Steiner is a savage businessman.
Haas plan, yeah.
But anyway. Okay, yeah.
Next question, Zerok03. Pirelli thought a two-stop was the fastest strategy. The entire field went for a three-stop. Is it the other way around this season? Do these tyres require more stops? I mean, mathematically, yes. You've answered that in your own question there, Zerok. But obviously, there is still a bit of unknown around the tyres. You know, despite having these six full days of testing, three at Barcelona and three in Bahrain, clearly the teams are still very much getting their heads around how to utilise these tyres. Of course, we lost the Q2 tyre rule as well, so everybody bar the McLaren started on the softs. And it seemed like they were very much learning as they went along. You know, they were trying different strategies. We had the Mercedes going on the hards because, you know, Tommy mentioned earlier the fact that they'd kind of locked in where they were finishing anyway, so they were trying something different. And, you know, Hamilton came out of the pits and was basically on ice, which I found very interesting to watch. But hopefully this is going to be a recurring theme throughout the season where Pirelli don't know that much and the teams don't know that much either. And that's great when the teams don't really know what the fastest strategy is. That makes for unpredictable, great racing. And that's what we want to see.
You'll notice a consistent theme here that I was just really pessimistic about everything coming into the new season, because I was sure, like Pirelli had been saying last year that, yeah, it's likely we're just going to get one-stop races at every single Grand Prix. And I was thinking, oh my God, no, please. Like with the Q2 tyre rule being scrapped allegedly these tyres lasting longer and having better durability. I was thinking, God, like strategy is just going to go into the bin. It's going to be everyone starts on softs, switches to a hard tyre, Bob's your uncle. But I was pleasantly surprised. And whether that's a mix of the tyres not performing as expected or maybe teams just wanting to play it safe, I'm not sure. But pleasantly surprised to see three stops happening, and also how slow the stops have been. I know that obviously there were rules brought in 2021, sort of halfway through the season, to make pit stops a bit longer because they were getting too quick, and I think there were concerns that maybe they weren't particularly safe. But F1 brought in things so that, you know, you would have to wait for so long for a wheel to be attached or whatever. Some of the stops that we saw yesterday were particularly long. I made notes of some of them. As you say, the Sainz and Leclerc did some quick stops with a 2.5, but people like Norris had a 5.5 second stop, and I think there were longer ones than that. I think it's just mainly because maybe the car's a bit heavier. The wheels are obviously a lot bigger, whereas before they had the 13-inch tyres that they had to put onto the car. They now got these massive 18-inch ones. So I think it's a mix of things. But
let's not forget McLaren being so far off the pace, they probably just weren't in a rush. They probably just thought,
Maybe they bought the Lego tyres out.
Let's have a little look around. Yeah, Lego
tyres. Check the brakes aren't on fire. Yeah.
I mean, maybe. I mean, that may actually have been a thing.
Yeah. I'd totally forgotten about the... until you mentioned it, that Hamilton going out on the hard tyres and looking like he was on a wet track. That was absolutely bizarre. When he came out the pits, I genuinely thought, is this what it's going to be like for everyone? Are we going to... Because they mentioned something about the tyre blankets aren't as warm or something.
Yeah.
And there has been talk of getting rid of them completely. But when Hamilton came out the pits, I was like, hang on a minute, are people going to... You know, are we going to get people doing like overcuts here because it takes so long to heat up the tires, like an IndyCar where, you know, you're skating on ice.
Formula 2 as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you're skating on ice for the first lap. That was pretty mad. But yeah, I guess another positive is that so far, based on one race, so let's hope it continues, is that it's not these one stops and, you know, three stop two stop, three stop races, sign me up, because that's normally a lot better, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Vibes. Moving now to talking about Formula One graphics and the fail in which they were, which is a shame. Danny 87 King, thoughts on the new FIA graphics and lack of timing screen during race and quali issues? I mean, it was a shame, really. I think that, you know, the actual layout of it, the look of it looks decent. You know, I thought, wow, you know, so a brand new era of Formula One and it looks cool. It kind of goes in line with what we saw last year with the sprint race graphics. But there's definitely some things to be ironed out. I'm still not a massive fan of the quali graphics and how small the purple sector parts are. Obviously, they also had everybody going purple in Sector 1 pretty much, which, you know, these small things are massive in terms of how a viewer absorbs what's going on. Not only that, but in the actual race itself, there was no timing for a lot of it. You didn't know the gaps between drivers. It looked like you were genuinely watching testing, and it was just, you know, they're all just circulating. So for me, you know, you don't really realize how important the graphics are until you lose them. And then you go, wait, I don't actually know the picture of this race. I don't know who's closing in on who. You could tell the commentators didn't really know what was going on either and kind of rely on what's on screen as well. So it's a shame that they had all these problems, because it maybe just leans towards maybe they haven't tested them enough. I don't know. But yeah, for the first race of the season, so much hype. They needed that to be spot on in order to really contain that excitement.
Speaking of testing, why weren't they introduced during testing, and then they could have got all the teething problems out of the way? Maybe would have been more of a better issue. I mean, I personally didn't mind them as much, but I do totally get some people's annoyance, and especially some people that, you know, have visual impairment as well. Like, I was, I think it was Verstappen and how Red Bull, they put dark blue on a black background and you cannot read. And I actually, I was watching the race back, and I couldn't watch it on HD because it was on plus one. So I was watching it on Channel 4 in standard def. And oh my word, you cannot read those graphics in standard definition. You could not see anything in standard definition. So I do sympathize with people that, you know, have to watch that on or are visually impaired. And it's just not very clear and readable. And especially, yeah, things like dark blue and black. And then they just had a bit of a mare where there'd be random, you know, you had Kevin Magnussen versus Kevin Magnussen at one point. I think when they were showing the Charles Leclerc replay of him battling with Verstappen, you just had Alonso P10 plus like 40 seconds behind or whatever. And it was just his bit of the timing tower was still there. They just had a bit of a shocker, and it did very much feel like first day back. So yeah, hopefully they get that sorted.
Also, I had another bugbear. And I can't remember if in like the post race interviews that they put on YouTube and stuff, or post qualifying, they usually go through each driver and get some comments. But they don't put the position of where they were anymore. Like, they just have the name, and I'm like, what's going on here? And for whatever reason, they just haven't included positions and stuff. I don't know if it carried over to TV as well, but it's just things like that. You go, you know, this is very important information that you're just leaving out.
Yeah, I am with you both there. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, you know, they've updated them. It looks nice. It's quite Americanized, like how I saw it. It reminds me of watching like an American sporting event, which is not a negative thing. I'm not trying to make that a criticism at all. But yeah, some of the graphics, like you say, they're just too dark and you can't read race numbers next to them, and all of the images that they've been using for, you know, the end of a session. It's like Phantom of the Opera. They've got so much shadow on one side of their face that you can't see it.
And that it's like, niche. Wow,
that is a niche reference. But it's, yeah, for some of them, I'm like, I'm not too much of a fan, but I'm just waiting. And I really hope F1 do this, and this could be a controversial opinion, but I really hope this is the year that Formula One accept and welcome in having split screens for certain parts of the races. I know that we didn't have loads of chaotic things going on, yesterday in Bahrain. But that's one thing that I think would be a good move for F1, because we see it in like IndyCar from what I've watched. Tommy, you'll probably maybe know a bit more about that than I do because you watch more IndyCar. But yeah, having different frames available so it's not just one fixed image. I'd quite like to see something like that introduced. But yeah, maybe they should sort out their graphics before they start getting too adventurous with other camera angles as well. But
you made an interesting point there that about it being a bit Americanized, which I'm not against. But one thing that I've just seen Sanjeev has written in the Team WTF One chat about the driver numbers are kind of useless as they are right now. And I didn't actually think about that at the time, but now I've just read that. It is very NASCAR-y to have the driver numbers down the side. But in Formula One, you can't see the driver numbers, apart from obviously Lewis Hamilton this year that's made his bright yellow.
Yeah.
But you know, the Ferrari, for example, it's black on a red car. You can't tell the difference. So the driver number, it works in NASCAR because every car has a giant number on the roof, on the side, and then it's very easy to go, you know, Jimmy Johnson, 48. Okay, that's car 48.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You cannot do that in F1. If you're a new fan and you see Charles Leclerc 16 and you see the two Ferraris side by side, you're like, well, which one's 16? I can't.
And also, there's no team identification anymore. Like in the actual order, if you look at it, there's no color to differentiate.
No, they just put the logo very small.
Yeah. But it's not easy when you look at it at face value. It's the number rather than the team. But it has to be the team. You have to be like, okay, signs SAI or whatever is Ferrari because it's red. Okay, perfect. Yeah. But it isn't that easily identifiable.
But then
they do
use the teams for when they're writing text, which actually is annoying because I'd rather it be in white so you can actually read it. Whereas they do the team's colors for that stage. And that's where I personally found, especially when I was watching on Standard Definition, it came up and it was something Verstappen said on the radio and it was just blue on black. You just couldn't read it. It's just very weird.
Definitely some teething problems, and hopefully they will evolve them as the races and the feedback comes in. Final question. At 100K Zach, I assume that name's supposed to be, who was your driver of the day? Charles Leclerc, moving on.
I think, yeah, Carlos, because I've seen the word Carlos Sainz. Charles Leclerc.
I was going to say, whoa.
Katie on the Carlos Sainz hype train there.
Yeah. I've done the thing where I've like seen a word written and I've just said it.
Yeah, I think it has got to be just from Kevin Magnussen and...
Yeah, but I just wanted to know your driver of the day, mate. You know,
yeah. I don't need your life story.
No, we'll go into ABCDF one.
Exactly.
Well, haven't we? Yeah. I think it is, Charles. Yeah.
Good lad. All right, that's what I wanted to hear.
Checks on the post.
Loud and clear. Right, now it's time for ABCDF1. I don't even know if we have a jingle anymore. I don't even know if you play it. I never check to see if you play it or not, Tommy, or if it's literally just a point where I'm like, oh, I'm pressing a button. And then you don't ever actually put anything in anyway. Right, ABCDF1 time now. Let's start. Right. Well, I was going to say right at the top, it's not anymore. Mercedes are in the mud, but they're going to start with Hamilton anyway, because they are last year's Constructors' Champions. So, Lewis Hamilton, I am going to give him an A.
Same.
Same seats.
And the fans gave him an A as well. Sames is everywhere. George Russell, I'm going to give him a B.
Same. B.
Same.
And the fans gave him a B.
We've not actually spoken about Russell at all. What did you?
Okay, let's talk about George Russell. I think that his race pace was okay. He didn't exactly blast the doors.
He wasn't
open.
Mr. Saturday, was he?
No,
by any stretch he wasn't. Of the imagination.
He wasn't Mr. Saturday. Messed up in quali. He kind of the way he described him messing up in quali, I was like, mate, just hold your hands up and say you locked up into turn one. But he's like, no, we're trying some different things. It didn't work out.
We attempted to lock up into turn one, see if it would make us go quicker.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounded like. I was like, mate, just hold your hands up and say you made a mistake. Like, you pushed too hard. But yeah, obviously that mistake didn't help his race at all. He seemed to be a little bit off the pace of Hamilton, but not by too much. So I'd say overall it was a reasonably solid race for him, but it just seemed like, as Mercedes said, it was a testing session, and I highly doubt he was pushing it to the absolute limit in order to extract every bit of performance because he didn't need to.
Yeah, it was very anonymous. we've not really got any TV time either. He just kind of tootled around and did the business.
Just boinging around.
All that hype. We'll find out. I'm sure we'll see some more from him later in the season. But yeah. Very anonymous for to say that was probably the biggest story of the offseason.
I know.
He'd be in the Merc, and it was like, oh, he's in ninth and just brings it home behind Hamilton, and pretty that was it, really. Nothing too crazy, but not bad.
Right, next up, Max Verstappen, A.
I'd say A, yeah.
Yeah, A.
And the fans gave him an A as well. We're 3 from 3, everybody. Come on, we can do this. Sergio Perez, I will give him a B.
Same.
But just want to mention, he did do a good job in qualifying, which I'm happy about.
He did much better than much what better. We thought last year.
So,
seems like we're such Sergio Perez haters that didn't put him in our top 5.
God forbid we have an opinion. And the fans gave him a B as well. Yeah, I think Sergio, his race pace was a lot better as well, and very much more in the region of what you expect to see from the Red Bull second driver. So, yeah, I'd say it's a solid start for Sergio, definitely.
He's there to inherit Verstappen's failures. So it's just unfortunate he also had a failure himself. So I think that's fairly, like, that's, Red Bull can't ask much more than that, apart from being first or second.
Yeah.
And in the first place, but yeah.
Exactly. He was in the mix. Next up, Charles Leclerc, A star.
I think an F.
I was thinking a B, A-star. Maybe.
No, you're both scum.
We're both
scum. Oh no, it's not.
And the fans gave him an A star as well. No surprise. We're 5 from 5. Come on, everybody. Carlos Sainz. I'm going to give him an A.
This is where we disagree. He's getting a B. I don't know how people can give him an A when they gave Perez a B and Russell a B and he was off his teammate exactly.
Still a grade lower. You know what I mean? Like, he's still got P2.
Yeah, but is that just the car performance? Like,
okay.
I think it's a B. I think in a year when he was hyped up massively to be absolutely trounced.
No, you win. You win, Tommy. You win. Just make Charles Leclerc's performance look better as well. So. But no, actually, it is very comparable. I think his race, you know, he fell away from Verstappen and Leclerc at the start, didn't he? And
there was not one moment that looked like he was going to beat Leclerc or even Verstappen. So.
And if anything, he was coming under pressure from behind. So no, fair enough. I'll give Sainz a B, actually. Katie, are you sticking with an A, or are we going to be convinced into agreeing?
I'm really stuck because I think... Yeah, that he did a good job this weekend. And, you know, it's not like he did well in qualifying. He did okay in the race. But then, yeah, if there's more potential that he thinks he can unlock, then by giving him an A this time might not be reflective if he does a better performance next time and I can't give him an A star. But I think I'll stick with an A. I'll be nice. I'll be the nice one.
No, it's not nice because then we're not agreeing, Katie. God. Okay, fine. But Sainz still gets a B because I've moved. And the fans gave Sainz an A.
Thanks, fans.
So there you go.
Love you.
Lando Norris. I'm just gonna have to say a D.
It's difficult because they're in a rubbish car. But
he went for a crazy strategy that didn't work. But I mean, it's difficult to reading into his race. So he went for a completely different strategy and apparently, according to the race, on the ground.
On the ground.
had he obviously out-qualified Ricciardo quite considerably and beat it. I think it's definitely a low C, high D for me, and I know we're not allowed to do that, so I'm going to give him a... C.
Okay, I'm going to give him a C as well. Fair play. Now, the only reason I want to give him a C is because I want to give Ricciardo a D, and I don't think Ricciardo deserves an E for the car performance. So.
Yeah, no. First innuendo of the year. Done.
I didn't say the D, did I? Anyway, carry on.
You said a D, but that's true. So, yeah, I think Norris, he did better in qualifying, although Ricciardo, you know, has had his troubles. But, yeah, C for Norris.
But. Okay, yeah, C for Norris, yeah. And a C from the fans for Lando. And then Danny Ric, I want to give a D.
I will give Daniel Ricciardo a D grade as well.
I'm going to continue with being nice, and I'm going to give him a C because of his lack of testing with COVID and getting over that. And I'll give him benefit of the doubt that he was just recovering from a terrible last week. So this is your final warning, Danny.
Not a terrible last season, just a terrible last week.
I love Danny Ric so much, but his career is
spiraling downhill massively, and I hope it changes, but
same, because there's only so much more benefit of the doubt I can give Danny Ric in terms of,
and he finished ahead of Norris. I know Norris did have a crap strategy, but little wins.
Small wins. 14th. Yeah.
Woo! Get in there. Danny Ric, D, and the fans gave him a D as well. Fernando Alonso. I'm just trying to remember what we saw of Fernando Alonso.
Started eighth, finished ninth behind Ocon, which surprised me.
Yeah, actually, no. The only things we did really see of him was him being overtaken by Ocon several times, I think. So I'm going to give Alonso a B.
I'm giving him a C. Yeah. He got beaten by his teammate who had a 5-second penalty.
Pushed somebody else off the track. So, yeah, not great. Yeah. But no, it was still, you know, there was a little.
Still scoring points. I mean, God, Jesus.
Yeah, he's still.
What does he do? You give him a C. C's like horrible. Like,
No, C's all right.
C's all right.
No, it's C's all right. Yeah, it is. C's. The average grade,
considering as well that two Red Bulls didn't finish, and Gasly, who was he running in the points before he had his problem? I can't remember.
It was, yeah.
And anyway, say about the 5-second penalty, we had a safety car, so that's kind of nullified.
What do you mean?
I'm still giving him a C.
The fact that you were like, oh, Fernando had a Ocon had a five. Yeah,
didn't they let Ocon pass to build a bit of a gap so he would get his 5 seconds, like he could get a bit of a lead to.
L plan working strong. Although
I think Fernando Alonso deserves a B for just being a really cooperative teammate. But you guys are just savage, so no worries. Fair enough, because the fans gave him a C as well, so you're all horrible. Right, next up, Esteban Ocon. B.
B.
C.
Are you kidding?
No.
He finished 7th.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's fair to grade him higher when he had a poorer qualifying than his teammate and also punted Schumacher and caused a collision.
Whoops-a-daisy.
So turned around very quickly from being, I'm being really nice.
I know. Yeah, Ocon finishes 7th. You're like, no. Fair enough. If you want to get, are you committing to a C?
Yeah, because it probably would have been 10th had it have been without the Gasly and Red Bull issues. So. Yeah.
Fair. Okay. Ocon got a B from the fans.
Nice.
Next up, Pierre Gasly, who was running on the sort of outer edges of the points, wasn't he, before he DNF'd?
He was like 8th or something, I think.
So I'm going to give him a B. Katie's going to give him an E. I
B.
Yeah, F. B. B's cool. Nice.
And the fans gave him a B. Yuki Tsunoda, I'm going to give him a B.
Yeah, B turned it around.
Yeah, B.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't grade him. He still worries me in qualifying that he was miles off the pace. But if you make up in the race.
Yeah, it doesn't matter,
does
it?
You get a free pass of forgiveness.
Even from you, the biggest Tsunoda fan.
Yeah,
love it.
I am worried.
I think I said, I am what I am.
Yeah.
Next up, Nico Hülkenberg. I mean, it wasn't great, was it, from Hulk? Gonna give him a
bit of leeway.
Out-qualified Stroll.
Yeah, out-qualified Stroll.
And then the race, he just was meh.
Yeah, he did out-qualify Stroll, but I think that was just Lance being horrific.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you know, we have to, it's almost comparable to K-Mag rocking up and getting P5, but Hülkenberg was just nowhere. I mean, he finished 17th behind Latifi in the Williams. So Lance Stroll finished 12th in the end in the Aston Martin. So I'm going to give him a D, C. Because he's just rocked up into Formula One.
Yeah, I think a C's fair.
He didn't know considering testing either, did he?
No, he didn't. 2 minutes notice. So, C.
Good stuff. Of course, K-Mag did have a little bit of testing, didn't he, in Bahrain? So fans gave Hülkenberg a C as well. Lance Stroll, he finished P12, had a horrendous qualifying. The Aston Martin is a dog. C.
C.
Yes, C.
And the fans gave Stroll a D. Latifi, I mean, just horrendous. I mean, lost to Albon in his first race. It's got to be a D.
He got absolutely trounced by him. I know, like, people make such huge things over the first race and one moment, but when obviously Alex out-qualified Latifi, people were like, oh, okay. Because I think you suggested it in, you know, like, that looks great for Albon if he essentially does what George Russell does, and George Russell has been promoted to Mercedes. Mm-hmm. It looks great for Albon, and it's fair to say he did that in the first race. B or B.
Wait, we're talking about Latifi.
Sorry.
I was like, whoa.
I scrolled down to Albon and then my brain was just... Sorry, Latifi gets
actually,
an E.
I'm going to get an E, actually. Yeah,
I'm going E.
I said D and I was like, no, that's well too nice. E for Latifi. The fans gave him a D.
Latifi.
Alex Albon now, Tommy.
Sorry,
I'm going to give him a B.
Yeah, a B.
Yeah, welcome back, Alex. Well done.
Is your grade a B?
Yes, yeah, B.
And the fans gave him a B as well. Valtteri Bottas qualified P6, dropped to 14th at the end of lap one, and then finished P6 at the end, which is what a topsy-turvy race that was. That's Bottas, yeah, good lad. I don't, you know, had a bad start, but that's a solid A from me.
I got flashbacks actually, but from last year that Bottas, great in qualifying. In fact, it was actually Bottas and Perez both kind of plummeted at the start. And it was like, are we still in 2021? And then they both obviously brought it back and were good. But yeah, Bottas, an A. Be interesting to see what he can do actually with... I was actually surprised that where he finished, because he seemed to kind of... I know a lot of people are tired at the end, but he dropped down and then he was racing Zhou Guanyu, sorry. it was like, he just then suddenly appeared and it was like, oh, Bottas was like, where was he? Sixth. Yeah, it was just like, what? Sixth. It's kind of
in
a shock.
Alpha.
Yeah, A.
What? Yeah, A. Sorry, A.
Whoa. Steady.
Yeah, but very good.
Good stuff.
I think if he hadn't messed up the star, I genuinely would consider for an A.
Yeah.
I think an A star might have even been on the cards if he hadn't messed up the start. But
Bottas
could have won the race. Who knows?
He would have been K-Mag, I guess you could probably argue, if he hadn't.
Yeah, true. So the fans gave Bottas an A as well. Zhou Guanyu, I'm going to give him an A. It's his first race.
Yeah.
Yeah, an A.
Well,
decent.
Proved a lot of people wrong.
Well done.
I thought he drove a solid race. He wasn't obviously like incredible, but he's a rookie and he's come in with a lot of pressure at the end of the day. Like people just thought he was, you know, Mazepin levels of bad, and he's shown that he's actually a solid, decent driver.
And he's the first Chinese driver ever, isn't he, in Formula One? Is that right?
He is. First Chinese driver to
literally
start
the entirety
a
of China on your shoulders.
And
that's
first Chinese driver to score a point, and wherever he finishes next race, he'll be the first Chinese driver to finish.
So we should just make this into an ongoing meme. First Chinese driver to finish 10th, first Chinese driver to finish wherever.
But yeah,
take it all off.
I just want to shout out him as well on social media, because it's so refreshing to see, if anyone's seen his tweets and stuff, it almost goes back to like old school Twitter where like people don't have a PR person and all his tweets are just like, oh my God, I got into Q2, I'm buzzing. And
yeah.
Oh my God, I'm really happy. It just seems like a proper, like, humble, nice guy. And I'm loving his tweets. They're awesome.
Cool. So an A-star for his tweets. Yeah. A for Joe and, Joe and an A from the fans as well. Kevin Magnussen, A-star, moving on.
A-star, easy.
Yep. Yeah.
Fans gave him an A-star as well. And Mick Schumacher, we're going to give him a B.
Yeah, so close to points.
He was on worn soft tyres, I think, at the end. Which,
yeah, I thought I was going to go for a C, but then I realised that he was on the worn tyres at the end and was a sitting duck because he was probably going to get some points, maybe.
Well, he was 10th at the safety car restart.
And then just dropped back. But, yeah, I'm interested to see how the next race goes because I know we mentioned that it's obviously good to have K-Mag as a buffer, but I also worry that K-Mag could potentially derail his entire career. So
it's concerning.
We'll see.
It is concerning. The difference in performance between the two was quite substantial. So Mick Schumacher is going to have to learn from him and build upon it very quickly. Cool. Mick Schumacher got a B from the fans as well. Right, let's go to the Bahrain Grand Prix predictions. Ferrari win. Yes. Has no points. No. So that's 1 point for me. I'm glad that the Haas one came true. So it's fine. Or didn't come true from my side. So 1 point for me, Katie.
I was going to skip over mine very quickly because I made them really well, off the top of my head.
Well, we all did, actually, to be fair, to be honest with you.
Latifi ahead of Albon. No. And Carlos Sainz doesn't make Q3. Thank you. Next.
I mean, Thomas is great as well.
Yeah, Hamilton. I should have just gone for the Hamilton podium thing, shouldn't I? That would have been funnier. But yeah, Hamilton wins, which he didn't. And both McLaren's DNF. I mean,
they might as well have. Sorry, McLaren fans. Then we got some fan predictions. Ricardo 41, 7 constructors in the top 10.
No.
I think you just missed out.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes, 6. Oof. And front Mason the Messiah, front wings will fall off due to the bouncing. Nope. Lev's F1 debut points scorer. Yes.
Yes.
Joseph Guanyu. Good stuff. Saudi Grand Prix predictions. I've gone for Mercedes another podium and Red Bull fall further behind Ferrari.
Nice and vague.
Your Ferrari like hype is like a roller coaster. I love
it. Wait, why?
Just in the, like, you started off on, like, Ferrari the best, they're going to win the title, guaranteed. Then in the middle, you're like, I remember that Ferrari have had some struggles.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the podcast, it's like, Red Bull will be this terrible, and Ferrari will own them again.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this short
I'm enjoying it, it's funny.
And, yeah, there you go, there's my two.
I have said a red flag.
Right, when?
Between Friday and Sunday.
Really?
Oh, no, you can't have that.
That'd be smoldering.
You've got to pick a race.
Red flag. At some point in the season, there will be a red flag. Okay.
Thank you. That's my prediction.
Your two predictions are horrendous.
Well, I went for crazy ones and they didn't pay off, and I want to win. So
when is red flag happening?
This is
red flag will be in the race.
Okay.
Okay. And then porpoising. Really bad.
Right. Somebody... So how do we measure that? Oh, that looks really bad. Like, what do we do? How many bounces per second?
It's a very high speed track. Yeah, it's a high speed track. So I think.
Okay, visibly worse than Bahrain. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, and it'd be like a big talking point.
And myself and Tommy can be the adjudicators.
Yeah, we'll judge based on.
Oh, well, that means I'm not going to get any points. Can we ask the fans because they're nice?
Okay, Tommy. Yeah.
Mick Schumacher gets his first points and Ricardo out in Q1 again.
Well, brilliant. Yeah, why don't
you forget he runs the streets,
mate?
Tommy. Apparently he runs the streets and this is a street circuit. So
I hope he does get Q1 for his sake. And the three fan predictions, Timo 29202683. Red Bull will have another double DNF. Oh, if that happens, Tommy will not be on the podcast.
Yeah, I won't.
_ Scott Elder, 0 points for any Mercedes customer team. Oof. I don't know if you can hear the drilling just started, but anyway, why did you start now? Yuri _1996, back-to-back victory for Leclerc. Yes, Yuri, you are my burner account. I was going to let you guys talk, but the drilling, I think, has stopped. Anyway, actually, thanks to Laura Barrera, who sent the results in, and it turns out that Katie was the winner of the predictions last year by 1 point. So it was Katie with 16, me with 15, Tommy with 11, because he's just rubbish, and the fans also got 11. I mean, that's bad from the
fans. Are you calling the fans rubbish as well?
To be fair, Tommy is the one that picks the fans once.
You can tell because we've got 11. Yeah, I need to be more like you guys and just do... well, I've kind of done that this week, to be honest. I've changed my
tactic.
I need
to be more like you guys. What do you mean?
Well, Saudi Arabia will have a red flag. exactly the same results as last time. We'll see.
We will see. Next prediction. There will be a green light at the end of the pit lane. Love
there
it.
Will be a car
and then there
on
won't
track.
Somehow. I know.
Yeah.
Don't get any points.
So, Tommy, final thoughts?
Final thoughts are...
Never fails to entertain
me. No, I genuinely forgot that was a thing as well. Why do I forget every time? We've done it so many times. My final thoughts are, I really enjoyed that race despite the result, and we will see if that is still the case, if it's another double Red Bull DNF in Saudi, when I will be crying into the cake.
Oh, yeah, we love to see it. We don't love to see Red Bull double DNFs, but we love to see Tommy's pain. Katie! Wow. Oh, no, I don't. It's all banter. It's all banter, Tommy. Love you, really. But Charlotte Clare,
I'm going to go for another vague one and just say I'm just so happy F1 is back. We've done this podcast. I've had a smile on my face for most of the time. I do suffer from resting bitch face. So, you know, sometimes I might just wander off and be like, But generally, I'm just so happy to have F1 back in my life. And yeah, to be able to share it with everybody watching and listening.
Good stuff. Well, my final thoughts are Charles Leclerc, world champion. So thank you, everybody, for entering the Charles Leclerc era. The Ferrari 1-2 hype is well and truly sending me straight to, well, we're in race week already again, once again. It's still drilling. Go away. You're clearly a Red Bull fan that's doing that drilling. They're not happy at all.
I've got
my thoughts.
One more final thought.
Go on.
You're going to be in a Ferrari hype train t-shirt on the next podcast.
Good idea to say that because I forgot to mention it. We are releasing some Ferrari hype train merch. I will be in it if they send it to me, if our company send me one by the time Sunday comes around again. I will be wearing it as soon as possible and be sleeping in it probably as well. So sign me up. Can't wait for that. It'll be on the WTF1 store. Link in the description. Check it out. Hype Train t-shirt. Boomtown. Thank you to Team WTF1 for watching live. Great to have you here as always. And Katie, Tommy, thank you so much. Katie's just punched her microphone. Thank you everybody for watching and listening as always. We've got lots more content to come, so please subscribe if you're new. 5 stars if you are loving life, or thumbs up if you're on YouTube or whatever. Give us the million out of 10. Ferrari are here. Love it. Get in there. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. You're really making me want them to have a double DNF next race.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.